Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Catholic Canuck Podcast. I'm so glad you tracked us down here. I hope you're having a blessed day wherever you may be in the Universal Church. Well, how cool is this? Peter Grandich, who has been on countless, probably thousands of different shows, whether that's podcasts, TV shows, radio, many conferences all around the world, mostly to do with financial investments and the world of investments and money. And he's got some amazing insights and great expertise from all the years of experience he has dealing in that field. But in this conversation, I think you're really going to enjoy this because Peter lives in the world, but he is certainly not of the world. And he shares a lot of great insights on his faith in Jesus Christ, his love for the Catholic Church, his love for the truth and the pursuit of the truth, and to be an authentic witness of Christ's love in today's hurting world. So I also thought of this fantastic quote from one of the great saints of our church, St. Edith Stein. She said, "Anyone who seeks truth seeks God, whether or not he realizes it." And it really is true. And I keep thinking of Pontius Pilate too, you know, when right before Christ endured his passion and his death and then ultimately his resurrection for us, that Pontius Pilate looked Jesus right in the face and he said, "What is truth?" And Jesus, the truth personified, was staring him right back at him, and he didn't even know that that was the truth. Well, my prayer and my desire for you as a fellow Catholic and fellow person of goodwill is that when we do find people are asking what is the truth, that we point them right to the cross of Jesus Christ. And regardless of what's happening in the world, because we know there's a lot of darkness and confusion out there, and it can be a little unsettling when we're looking at the state of this world today. But as our great Saint Padre Pio said, he said, "Pray, hope, and don't worry. Worry is useless. God is merciful and will hear your prayer." So let's take a lot of comfort and joy and hope out of that particular quote from Padre Pio and really apply that to our daily lives. And I think that's what you're going to really like about this conversation with Peter, sharing his faith from the heart and a lot of great insights that he has and that go beyond the world of investments and money, but go to, well, what are we here for? We're here to store up treasures in heaven by our good works and by our faith and by how we share the love of Jesus Christ with others. We'll see you on the other side of the interview, my friends. Well, praise be Jesus Christ, now and forever. Well, Peter Grandich is an author, commentator, and speaker, a YouTube host who is very well known amongst anyone who is an investor or follows the financial markets. And after spending decades as a portfolio manager in and around Wall Street, he wrote his autobiography called Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid and presents at various investment conferences all over the world. But most important of all, Peter is a family man and is working diligently to build the kingdom of Jesus Christ in our fallen world. He is our brother in Christ. So a big welcome to Peter Grandich to the Great White North and the Catholic Connect podcast.
Well, it's a really privilege and a blessing to be with you here. So I'm very, very pleased. It's been a tough road tying my fate to my sleeve and my business, but I believe I've been called for it, and I've only survived the things that I've gone through my sins to be here today to speak to you.
Well, fantastic. And we'll definitely get into that here for sure. I always like to ask our American guests when they come on for the first time, if they've got any connection to hockey and if they visited Canada. You said offline that you have come to Edmonton before, where I'm in my area. So maybe tell us a little bit about that. And I know, just being where you're from, you mentioned that you've spent a lot of time with professional sports teams around the New York area there, and the Rangers were one of them. So maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I would say it's a couple hundred times over 40 years that I visited Canada. So Toronto and Vancouver mostly, because I went to do investment conferences or appear on television and that like. But I've been to Edmonton, I've been to Calgary. I've made it my point whenever I was in those cities to see a hockey game, because I've been a hockey fan since a young man. And here in New Jersey, which I worked with a lot of the New Jersey Devils, we had 3 Stanley Cups, and still today, most fans here can't even name the 5 top players. But if you go into any town in Canada, even an 11-year-old can tell you everything you need to know about the Edmonton Oilers, or if you're in Calgary, about Calgary. And hockey is still second nature for Canadians and still not widely viewed here in America. But for me, it's been my favorite sport, but it is a sport unlike the other 3 majors that you have to see live. Television doesn't do it any justice.
That's a good point you make about just how kids know all these these players and there's team names. And, oh, we've got Connor McDavid, who, regardless of what sports you like, I mean, he's just so much fun to watch. He's so entertaining to watch. But, you know, I'm sure if you went out to the Standard or any average Canadian, they would tell you exactly who the starting goalie was for all those Stanley Cups for the Devils. Of course, Martin Brodeur, one of the greatest goalies of all time, and a Canadian that won an Olympic gold medal too for Canada. So I'm sure we could rattle off a lot of names off those rosters as well. And actually, probably someone you know, Ken Danico, who is an Edmonton guy himself. So
yeah, so Kenny's been a longtime friend. Actually, before I even started to deal with athletes, I was introduced to Kenny in the mid-1990s. And of course, when I was led to be involved in a Christian financial advisory company in the early, just as the new millennium started, he would be one of the first people that would come and help and join my board because I already had a previous relationship with him. And he now, of course, has not only finished his career with the Devils, but now is their color commentator for their television broadcasting, and someone I still see. In fact, I'd be going up to a Devils game next Thursday because of him. So, I used to joke with my Canadian hockey friends and ask them, were you born with your skates on? Because pretty well, you'll always hear this story from all the Canadian hockey players. Yeah, I started skating when I was 2 or 3 or 4 years old. And you know, it's just a way of life for a Canadian young boy. And now, of course, people have not recognized it yet, but it's growing. There's actually a Canadian, not a Canadian women's league, but a hockey league for women playing, and couple Canadian, a couple American teams as well. So it's still a sport that's specialized that you have to see. Once you go, one of the things I hear is people, once they say they've gone to a hockey game, they started watching hockey. But until then, they didn't. You really have to see it live.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's great. I mean, Peter, you've had such a long career when it comes to money and in the markets. And I guess this is related because in sports, you know, things have changed a lot probably in your life too, right? Where there's so much money involved in sports. And now what we're seeing in the last, especially in the last 5 years, I found in the various professional sports leagues around North America that there's this real agenda that's, I think, is contrary to the gospel message. And, you know, money is certainly one of them. I mean, it's just amazing some of the money that's thrown around at these athletes to in free agency. And even when they come right out of college or junior hockey or college football, sometimes I think it seems, and I'm kind of guilty of this too, and it's something that I've got to watch in my own spiritual life, is sometimes we make idols out of these guys. You know, they're just regular guys like you and I and our listeners that just happen to be very good at sports. But there's so much going on when it comes to money, but also some of these social agendas that seem to be pushed. Does that make sense to you, Peter?
Well, it makes great sense because it led me out of dealing with professional athletes. So let me tell you how I got in so you can understand how I got out. Just after the new millennium started, and after the first real battle with depression and the first loss of serious money, which would be a second one as well, I found myself for the first time really getting half serious about my Catholic Christian faith. And with that, I would join a Christian organization, favorite Protestant. It was supposed to be interdenominational, but it was more favorite to Protestantism. But nevertheless, it was Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And I would meet a man who had played on the first two giant Super Bowl team, who told me that God had sent him to meet me to start this Christian financial advisory company for Christian athletes. And he was a New York Giant, and I was a diehard New York Jet fan. So my first comment to him, Lee Roussan, was, God couldn't have possibly sent me to meet you because I used to root for you to drop the ball and die. But we did start a Christian financial advisory company. Long story short, it went for 20 years. But in early 2021, the combination of the politics and social impact into sports became so pronounced and against our faith, and the COVID played a role in it as well, I left dealing with professional athletes because I couldn't, on one hand, claim this strong Catholic Christian faith, and on the second hand, be around players and teams who are openly declaring things that go against my faith. And it was a tough decision because it was a big monetary loss to do that. But nevertheless, I did. And even the NHL, while not anywhere close to being woke as the NBA and the NFL is, it as well is seeing that. And it's very difficult for players now who I still speak to, although most of the players that I have with clients now have moved on, they've retired or what have you. But the few that remain tell me how difficult it is to keep their faith and still see all the anti-Christian, anti-Catholic movement that takes place now in major league sports.
Yeah, and I know that we had Trent Klatt, a longtime NHLer here recently on our podcast, and he'd spoken a little bit about that as well, is that it's a challenge to live your faith out in the professional sports environment. He had great support from his family to help him with that, but it's certainly not easy. And with the NBA, I'm a passive sports fan. I mean, I'm a hockey fan for sure, but even basketball is something that I did follow a little bit. But after kind of what happened 3 or 4 years ago, and just how things really shifted to a real political push, especially in that league, and I know we've seen that in the NFL and even Major League Baseball too. But I haven't watched anything since. It's really hard to get around that when you're trying to take your faith seriously, right, Peter? It becomes a part of your life is your faith in Jesus and living a sacramental life. And when things are opposed to that, it's hard to follow. And that's for anything. It doesn't have to be sports. So.
Let me tell you, David, what was the straw that broke the camel's back? So COVID's among us. It's late 2020, and my last of my NFL clients is a fullback, been in the league for 18 years, really can't share his name, but he comes and joins me for lunch. This started a few years back for me because I wrote publicly and did some interviews about the kneeling at the time, the Colin Kaepernick and the kneeling that was
Right.
going on. And I had already lost several clients and really put a mark on my business because of that. But now when the actual embracing and of all the socialist stuff that was hitting as well, we went out to lunch and I sat, and of course we had to sit outside at that time, it was because of the COVID. And I said to him, I says, listen, if the waiter here comes over and the bus boy and the owner, and they start telling you all about their beliefs politically and socially, and you look around, you see it all, what would you say? And he says, well, he said sincerely, I came here for lunch, not to hear that. And I says, exactly. So those people that go into the stadium to watch you play, left or right, they've gone in there to get away from all of that for a few hours, and yet you're pushing it on them. And he kind of concurred with me, and I saw this hope. Well, he also had a position where he commented in the New York area on a sports channel, and 4 days later, when it was brought up of the su subject, he said the exact opposite. And I said, well, that's it for me. Here's a man that I know expressed to me one way, and when it came time publicly expressed it another. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back. That's when I decided to close the company. It was called Trinity Financial Sports and Entertainment Management. I closed an office and I closed doing business, which was a significant part of my income at the time. But I was able to put my head on the pillow, and there have been other blessings, not necessarily monetarily, but that came from that, that clearly told me that God was saying, stay in that direction and don't be afraid to speak out about it, even though right now it has probably shut off much of the mainstream media that might have otherwise spoken to me. But a big blessing, and I have to add this, is that I continue to be a guest on Relevant Radio, which is the
Yes.
Catholic network here in the States. And they've been adamant to allow me to share my views openly. And with that, I feel that's where my calling's been. That's why when you reached out, I have no issues of speaking about this, because we have to tie our faith into our work. This it shouldn't be something that we should ever be afraid not to speak about, no matter what the circumstances are. Now, my Protestant brethren, who, when I did work in sports ministry, Protestants have a tendency of being far more open to speak about their faith at this point than a lot of Catholic athletes. I was with the New York Giants doing Bible study and chapel services for 13 years, and the Protestant players were much more open about their faith and willing to speak about it. But we need to, and if we don't, we fall victim to, in a sense, what the devil is trying to achieve, and that is to knock God out of the picture. And you said, I think at the beginning of this interview, that we put these players, we put entertainers and players on pedestals. And they have a great forum. They have a platform to go out. And some choose their faith, but more choose the secular. And now they crush those who try to tie their faith publicly into it. And that's the big battle that's before us.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, as evidenced by the Super Bowl, where it seemed like the outside entertainer singular seemed to overshadow the entire game because that's all they were really talking about, which was an
Real
interesting
quick on that, and I don't think people notice it, but there was a certain entertaining woman who, because she's having a relationship with one of the players, Taylor Swift, they were focused on her, and sitting in our box right next to her was a woman showing openly demonic, devilish support, and they were focused on it. And yet, I'm certain there was no coverage, even though it was the Super Bowl, so it might have not happened, but in NFL after games, even though they don't focus on it anymore and the cameras have told not to, there's still players that get together after the game and pray in the middle. None of that was being shown, but they were more than willing to show satanic support of someone multiple times. And that's just unfortunately the way of the world right now, and in this great spiritual battle that's underway.
It starts as something subtle, then it becomes a lot more out in the open, right? And I noticed that as well. And I think, there's a lot of other Christians, specifically Catholics, talking about that online after is what, a Super Bowl, like you said before, Peter, football and sports is supposed to bring us together and kind of get us away from the things of the outside world. But boy, when we're seeing demonic signals and signs, and we've seen some other wild things in halftime shows in previous Super Bowls as well, it's, boy, that can be really, really disheartening for people of faith, for sure, to see that kind of thing. So, Peter, I wanted to mention this to you before, but I'm going to mention to you now that this is with the most utmost respect for you. They have these sayings that, tell me you're a Catholic without telling me you're a Catholic, right? And over the past several months, I've listened to a lot of interviews with you, and I really admire how you carry yourself in secular interviews because you mentioned Relevant Radio, but you also talk to other people that are outside of Catholic circles as well. I just really appreciate how you carry yourself because it leaves no doubt that there's something unique about who you really are that goes beyond your area of expertise, and it allows a lot of the viewers to see that you have faith in Jesus Christ and specifically that you're Catholic, even with some of the pictures that you have behind you when you have these streaming videos. So, we've all heard the saying about, attracting bees with honey instead of vinegar. As someone who's worked in a secular environment for so many years that you have, how important is it for us Catholics, just to balance that thing about, you don't want to be too pushy about your faith, but you also want to demonstrate that you have a faithfulness to Christ, especially now because we are living in a confused and hurting world. And in a lot of Catholics, like we don't even recognize that there is a spiritual battle and there is evil and there is this demonic influence in this world. So, like, how can we work in that? Because most of our listeners work secular jobs and work with secular people.
Well, you're right. In the interviews, which I do mostly from my home office, will either be the crucifix, the Blessed Mother statue, the Sacred Heart. We're obviously just on a podcast, but if we were doing this on video, I would show it, and not to show off, but because it's part of my everyday life. But it is a challenge. I'm viewed only three ways. I know this from experience. First group is, oh, he's a charlatan. He's just using the religion to profit. And you know what? There's a lot of people that have done that and continue to do that. You only have to turn on some of the television evangelists to recognize that Christian prosperity is being practiced there in a big way, and that's not called for. They either accidentally or probably on purpose misinterpret scripture, the claim that God calls us all to be filthy rich and all that kind of stuff. And that's one thing. The second group is, hey, I don't care what you do. You could be religious, you could be not, but if you can make me money, I'm interested in talking to you. And then the smallest, the third group, are they're the most appreciative. And they're the ones that keep me going because for every hatred email and things where people take my faith and try to tear it apart, either directly through me to me or in websites and all where they stay anonymous, there's always someone that comes along and goes, boy, I was So happy to find out how you feel about that. And I've heard you on Relevant Radio or this or that. And I've really been trying to find someone because you have to understand when I wanted to form Trinity back in 2000, we went to the firm that we were currently doing our business through. And I said, listen, this is what we want to do and all. And basically the guy said, hey, you could put a rock on your door, you could put a bull or a bear, but you're not putting God's picture on your door. Very rare still in North America, Canada, or the US, where somebody openly in the financial service business openly ties it to their faith. Don't get me wrong, there's a handful of mutual funds. They're off Catholic, the Ave Maria, and all. But most people in the financial service business, even if they are devout, don't openly show that. They still work with their secular hat on and be their individual spiritual. But to openly put your faith on it is very hard. And it's gone much harder because the financial media, where most people hope to get, on and so they can show their wares and get more popular, don't want anything to do with that. They'll cut you off before you, and they'll certainly not have your back if you start to talk about that. But part of the blessing was that I got to a point in my life where I didn't have to worry about the next nickel. And therefore, I wasn't too concerned if somebody cut me off because I was sharing about my faith and all. But it is a challenge. It is. And, my born-again Christian friends, my fundamentalist friends, and I have some, and we always get challenged to talk about, Blessed Mother and purgatory and things of that nature. But they will almost, in a sense, beat their chest into somebody becoming a fundamentalist. I think we're called to just live our life naturally. And when we have the opportunity to share, but live by example, let somebody almost in a sense come to you and go, well, what is it that keeps you so above your head, even though so many negative things are happening? And that's when you get to share about your faith and what it means and so forth and so on. But that's a challenge. And it's becoming very, very challenging because I know it exists in Canada. I know it exists in the US. I know it exists in a very important country in my life. Ireland, my wife was born and raised in Ireland. I was married in Ireland. And in one generation, it went from a very holy practicing Catholic country to one of the most non-practicing. And it's very difficult for those that are there to remain to practice their faith because there's such evil pushing them out, not wanting to give them any chance to speak out. So I think you have to live there by example. And you can't be afraid to wear your crucifix. You can't be afraid to pray in public. That's what I think, we're called to do. And in my business, I keep hearing this from a lot of people. Man, there's so few people like you talking faith and finance openly. And you look for your opportunity. That's why I said I had no problem when you contacted me doing this. I look as this is a blessing to have a chance to speak like this because it isn't often happening.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm so appreciative that you came because I think it's important for others to see that there are Catholics that are trying to live their faith and they want to be outward about that because we need to be beacons of light to this world. Maybe we do have 100 people that are going to really disagree and dislike what we have to say and maybe attack us in certain ways. But maybe there's that one person, right? That one person that might change their heart. And we're here to plant seeds for people and let the Holy Spirit really do the rest. And I think the one thing that we have in common, with in the US and in Canada is you've probably heard about these burnt churches that we have in Canada. I
Yes.
think we're up to 97 of them, whether they're burned right to the ground or they've been desecrated or defaced in some way. Real heartbreaking stuff, Peter. It's especially because the premise of that is in the background is these First Nations schools, these residential schools and reports of mass graves, which are now I mean the truth is that they really don't exist. It's based on a falsehood and a lie, and it's been a very difficult time for us in Canada. And I noticed that since Roe versus Wade was overturned, praise God. But there's been a lot of attacks against Catholic churches, specifically, but also pro-life pregnancy centers, which of course Catholics have a lot to do with in the U.S. and even in Canada. So the cat's out of the bag, right, Peter? I mean, there's people know, that other side. There's that diabolical. There's the spiritual battle. They're coming for us anyway. So For us to be hiding from these kind of I shouldn't say altercations, but these events, and really, you know, asking God to help us to respond in the way that He wants us to, we really can't be shrinking back and hiding from this. We really got to confront these things, don't we?
Yeah, and you know, you brought it out that it's a great lie. That's the master lies of the universe. Everything is a lie, and we've seen it. We had an incident here just a week or 10 days ago, where in the great St. Patrick's Cathedral, probably
Yes.
a mecca of Catholic faith, you know, had a service which was just diabolical. I mean, it's just
It
no
really
way
was.
around it. And to know how in a sense the other side is winning souls is to see the complacency among people, even among Catholics, going, ah, I've heard it from some. Ah, this is today's world. You know, I was in one of our church after mass refreshments, and that was the discussion among people that, well, you know, it's this day and age, and you know, imagine if you tried to do something there, only you would get in trouble and all. And that's just exactly what the enemy wants to hear. That's exactly the play that they're hoping we're running up against them, and it's sad. It's part of the way it is. And listen, I think we have to be open also. There's a great spiritual battle within the church. There's a great movement against you know, a change that, you know, my argument in this is simple, and I'm not theologically strong, but my argument is very simple. There's nowhere in scripture do I see any of those scriptures have expiration dates. Okay, you don't practice that, but in 2024, I'm sorry, the game's over. You're allowed to change. You can do this, you can do that, and so forth and so on. And you would think, based on some of the decisions coming out of the Vatican and all, that there was expiration dates, and that there's this new okay to change the makeup of our ways. And again, that's just falling into the demonic nature that is really in every aspect of the world now, openly.
Well, the truth never changes because Christ never changes, right? It's the beauty of our church, and you know, the catechism and scripture is that none of this changes. But we seem to have, you know, people, like you said, even within our church, that want to reinvent the wheel somehow, and that's not part of the game plan. It's actually quite simple. You know, it's kind of like baseball, and they say, you know, well, baseball's a simple game. You hit the ball, throw the ball, catch the ball, right? And if you get those fundamentals down, everything else is going to come together. And in the church, it's we have it laid out before us, and at the price tag of many martyrs and you know, many saints that have shown us the way, and for us to come in this I guess the zeitgeist of this age, right, Peter, and this modern I guess is modernism, I guess is one way to put it, the secular culture, it seems to be seeping into our church too, and it just doesn't have to be that way, which is makes it quite frustrating, I think, for you and for me. When we have the answers pretty plainly in front of us. So, I wanted to ask you about your family life and a little bit about your faith journey. And reading your book, you had a real interesting piece about your family and specifically your father. Not all of us have perfect families. I don't know if the perfect family exists because of concupiscence and the reality of sin in this world. But there is that great story about your father and forgiveness in your book. You didn't grow up with faith, much faith at all, in your with your mom and dad and your family. But maybe tell us a little bit about your upbringing and through some of these trials, how you saw God's hand working in your life, and maybe how that eventually played into to your conversion in your life and you coming to Christ in a profound way.
Sure, you're right. So I was my mother was a non-practicing Jew, Russian, English, and Jewish, and my father was a non-practicing Croatian Italian. They married. My sister, who was born 7 years ahead of me, she was baptized and confirmed, but then my mother brought up thoughts. I was baptized after birth, but then my mother brought up a belief that I should be raised Jewish. My father said he had nothing to do with that, and so they just completely left religion out of my life. No book, no comment, no nothing. And until I was 23, I was never even in a church. However, I would meet my future wife in New York City. She was born and raised in Ireland, a devout Catholic. And of course, when her father came over and asked for the wedding to be in Ireland, I agreed. but I didn't realize that would also meaning to get married in the Catholic Church. And for that, I had to truly become a Catholic. So I went through my first confession at 23, which is big difference versus 7 or 8, and confirmation and all. And then I would be married in Ireland. But really, I probably would have married her if she was Buddhist or whatever. It wasn't a feeling that I had to become Catholic and embrace it. I just wanted to marry this girl, and this was part of the reasons to do so. And I was more of a C&E Catholic in the first part of my life. Christmas and Easter were the most important times for me to go, but the rest of the time wasn't really critical. However, I would, in the late 1990s, having thought I reached the American dream, had plenty of money, all the things American dream calls for, only to lose a good part of it, and found myself in the first of three serious battles of depression, panic attacks, and that would lead to had God placed in my life a friend at the time who had just started to become a full-time Catholic evangelist, and so I really only started looking at my faith and practicing in any half-serious matter as I began this new trend in my life in the millennium, starting that sports business and what have you and all. And it would take then in 2008, this time without any financial loss or typical things that sometimes lead to battles of depression, falling into a much deeper depression, hospitalization and what have you. And when I came out of that, I really then first focused on my faith in a big way. And a big part of that was this friend of mine who was now a full-time Catholic evangelist. He was my best friend, and it would involve Bible study and, really trying to understand what my faith was about and so forth and so on. And my friend, who really harped on, or the backbone to his ministry work was about forgiveness. That's what he felt God called us for, and the real story for Christ to come for the forgiveness. And it would take his passing in 2022, and a third and worst bout of depression ever, and a true loss of will, to really hit rock bottom and come out of it with a desire to practice forgiveness for the first time in my life. I literally sat in the latter part of 2022 into early 2023 and thought about everybody that I felt had hurt me or thought I hurt them, and sought true forgiveness, none so more than with my sister. And that all started back when my father, who unfortunately was a very overstrict dad, who verbally and physically did abuse my sister far worse than me, but nevertheless we both had it pretty bad. And the night before he would pass in 1988, he would come to my house and seek forgiveness. He would tell me all the reasons why he was a poor father. He led me to believe he some of the major sins he committed, asked for my forgiveness, which I gave him, and then the next morning would pass away. And that, and the combination of all the things that happened, I really found myself not too long ago in early 2023, really for the first time in my life, practicing the art of forgiveness and to understand truly what God meant it was. And you hear a lot of this, Dave. You hear that forgiveness is more for yourself than the people you're forgiving, because it's a bondage that when you don't and you carry that in anger, it may be very buried and you don't think it's impacting your life, but it stays in you. And once I freed myself of that bondage of holding things against people because I felt I was hurt by them and all, none more so than my sister, we now have a relationship that could never imagined. And realistically, everybody but one person accepted it. And it has freed me from time spent on it. And I really can only tell people that it is such a joy not to carry that disharmony that really remains in you, but because you feel people or somebody close. And many times it's in family. There's so many families where siblings and even children One of the things I learned of it is my wife and I began to do a lot of work in a nursing home and all. And we found a lot of people there who had children, but they hadn't seen them for years because it was disharmony. And when I think about my father's gift that he both went to my sister and me, what that probably changed for his internal life by practicing that art and seeking true forgiveness. To me, I urge people now, there's no story, no matter how bad people want to say and tell you how bad someone hurt them, is to seek out that forgiveness. And real quick, my friend who was my everything to me, and I recognized that part of this depression I had was because of the loss of him and the friendship that we had. He would like to tell the story of how he sought forgiveness to somebody who actually tried to sexually assault his wife and was a Catholic preacher, and he took him into his life, and he felt so hurt that he would travel to seek that person's forgiveness for him being mad at him. And now when I think about my friend, I can actually talk to you now without starting to cry, and that was hard to do in the early months. But now I understand why he had such a life of ministry of teaching forgiveness, and so many countless stories of people who would come to him and say after the ministry mission, they sought forgiveness and it changed their life for the better. So I would tell you that Jesus is all about love and forgiveness. That's the two big things. It's not lightning bolts. It's not he's about to teach us a lesson because we're living out of sin and all. His was about a father who at one time took sides and was something violent to get results. And now his son was created to come to teach us all about love and forgiveness.
Oh, that's powerful. Yeah. There's a lot of people too that have done a lot of different things in their life, and a lot of them haven't been so pure and with the best intentions. And of course, we live in a fallen world and talked about the spiritual battle already. A lot of people can't forgive themselves, Peter. I think that's a big problem in our church
You're
right now.
talking to
They're
one of them.
and I this is a bit of a struggle for me. It's an ongoing daily struggle is that there's so many vices. It's so easy to pick up a vice, right, Peter? Like it's to be a prideful person or a gluttonous person or a lustful person, greed. I'm sure we've all encountered that in some way, shape, or form in our lives. And there's real healing power in confession, though, isn't there? You think of the story of the prodigal son from the gospel, and for people to come back to confession, some people are afraid to confront these sins, but boy, God is so merciful and so loving. What is going to confession? What has that meant for you? And this is something that the practice has kind of gone away too, Peter, right? A lot of people just they don't go, and going regularly, it's so freeing, isn't it? It's again a part of the way of life of being a follower of Jesus Christ and living a sacramental life, isn't it?
Well, you said something that was very important because I would continue to stay in the bondage of past sins, even though I was forgiven, to the point where the very close priest at the time to me in confession said to me, if you come in here one more time talking about things that God has already forgiven you about, I'm going to have to punch you. That's actually what the priest said to me. He's a good friend. And we do that, but that comes from the enemy. That's where the enemy is. Because basically he's telling, nah, you're never going to be. Why are you even bothering with this stuff and all? Why that? And or else you'll hear this from the people that aren't going to confession. Ah, you can just say it right to God. What do you don't need to go in there and talk to a priest and all. First of all, I think it's very useful to when you sincerely seek forgiveness that somebody is there to hear that. Talk to that about and all. And that's what we have to understand. It's not the priest that's truly granting us, it's through him. But what I find also about that is how many people who are receiving without going to confession. And what does that lead to? And no one seems to be left that wants to talk about that openly. And what that can mean and so forth and so on. I really think that we are on this journey. We're never going to be able to spell humble, but if we can get to HUMBL and be working on E when our last breath comes, that'll be a great spiritual life, because our sinful nature will never get us 100%. But if we can get close to that, and it's just like now, speaking to this, knowing that you're going to share this, and I will openly share this with others, knowing that there's going to be people that might have otherwise said, boy, I'd like to deal with this guy Grange, but whoa, this Christian crap, and I've heard that, and I'm using a very delicate word there, which been called a lot worse that I get back in emails and messages and so forth. We have to be bold now. You know, what you're doing, you told me, if I may give you a little support, Dave, and tell you why I feel right at this moment, this in my heart, to be working full time, to be devoted to this with four children and all, to speak openly about this and all. Boy, you know, it may not seem like a gift at times to you, but don't stop, because we won't know at all what the results of this conversation will be until we stand before God. Until we, in a sense, it's not really a video recording. We're not going to watch this whole life play before us, but we're going to know. And these are the great things. These are the moments I'm recalling now. My great friend, Bill Wagner, who was the Catholic minister, saying to me, Pete, never turn down an opportunity to speak about the faith, because you're never going to know what good has come from it. And if I may share one story that I think is great. So my friend Bill and I went back within 5 years of doing a mission to a church not too far from us. And we had the refreshments after one of the missions. And this woman came up and she said, I need to tell you this story. And she said, I came to your mission 5 years ago, but had no idea about the mission. I came here to tell God I was about to die, that I was going to commit suicide. And she went through a whole story of what was wrong with her life. And she showed the scars from, she was a cutter and all this. But I sat down and heard your mission. I came back the next night. And by the end of the night, I came back to see Father, and I can't remember the name of the priest. And I went to a confession, and I haven't stopped since. And my whole life has turned, and yada, yada, yada. And she walked away, and I can see my friend Bill turning to me, and I'll cry right now when he said to me, well, how much is that worth? How much will that be in the difference of her internal life for going on with the mission? And we used to joke, because I was, in a sense, the single biggest benefactor to his ministry. So we would go and sit down. And I say, what are you going to tell me that story again? Because, you know, it was very difficult keeping this ministry going. One thing about Catholics different about our Protestant brethren, they have some understanding about tithing. Tithing is a lost art in our church. I make a joke that I tell that basically after we go through confirmation, we won't even hear anything about tithing. And I would joke about, I would write two books for Catholics, 100 Ways to Fold a Dollar, because we would see that when we'll do our collection for our mission. And my grandfather gave a dollar, my father gave a dollar, and I'm going to keep the tradition going by giving a dollar. Tithing is a very unspoken about subject in the Catholic faith. One of the reasons why I love going on Relevant Radio, and I've even done this offering now where I speak to Relevant Radio listeners for a donation to Relevant Radio, not to me, but to Relevant Radio, because that's a form of tithing. Tithing doesn't always have to be in monies. It can be in service. And it's one of the books where even some Protestants included in their Bible, the book of Malachi, where God openly challenges us, in a sense, requires us to tithe. It's a lost thing. And it's something that when I tell people, they say, well, what's the best way do you think I can invest? And I say, tithe. And they look at you like, are you crazy? And, you know, a lot of people are in difficulties of finances. They can't imagine giving 10% to the church right now. But all those that end up doing come back and tell you, I can't believe it didn't turn the moment after. And many times it doesn't turn monetarily, but other things happen in life. And that's where it's very tough, David. And I hope I'm not getting off your subject, but it's very, very important. We're stewards to this money. It's not our money. We're stewards to it. God says it early in Psalms that he owns everything. He's just given you the opportunity to be a steward about it. And that's why half the parables are about things related to money and things. There's more talk about money in scripture than there is about heaven or hell. God knew how what an impact matters of money and finance was going to have in our lives. Unfortunately, in the Protestant community, some have run what we call Christian prosperity. This, show us, and it's okay to have big airplanes and big mansions and all that kind of stuff, when that's not really the case. God calls us to have the heart of Mother Teresa. We're all not to give everything we have away, but He wants our heart to be like Mother Teresa and be willing to give up a part of we have and the fruits that He's given to us so others can benefit from it now. And where this world is going, socially, politically, and economically, from a secular point, you better be prepared to be in that position, because that's going to way that a lot of people are going to only survive in this. I know in Canada, this is true too. We've seen a dramatic increase in food bank usage in America. More and more people are called upon to be helped others, and it's becoming more difficult. Two-thirds of Americans are working paycheck to paycheck. And I wouldn't be surprised it's similar in Canada as well, because there's so much commonality between to our great countries. And that's where we're called upon, that we need to tithe and we need to be supportive, because there's so many people that are benefiting from that. And that's why he also points out, if I may also, talked about why it's so difficult for the rich man to get to heaven, the eye of the needle story, because it's much harder when wealth is in your life to give excess, where some of the greatest givers I ever met were people with little or no real worth, where the rich person became challenging. And that's why God gave those stories and the parables and things related to that, the 10 coins, the 3 coins, and the 1 coin, because He knows how much finance was going to impact our lives. And that's why I'm willing to do these talks and share these works and tell stories about my own misusage of money. And maybe at one time thinking that me, myself, and I were the three most important people in the world. And and going through the trials and having to literally hit bottom. And many times, unfortunately, we have to hit bottom before we're willing to embrace our faith. And sometimes you don't get a second chance. There are a lot of people in prison. When you talk to people both in the Protestant and Catholic community that work in prisons, sharing about their faith, they'll tell you one thing common they find. A lot of people in prison just made one really bad mistake. They weren't career criminals. They weren't horrible, demonically filled people, but they made one bad mistake. And thankfully, through prison ministry, they were given a chance to be shown that despite all that, God loves them the same as everybody else. And that's what's helping them get through their prison life, by understanding and embracing their faith. I
And
hope I didn't
Bert,
go off in the wrong
no.
direction for
Well,
you.
Peter, this has been fantastic. Actually, the next point I was going to talk to you about, a great minds think alike, I guess, was that the passage about fasting and prayer being the only thing that can drive out demons. And I think that sorry, fasting and almsgiving, I'm sorry, is what can cast out certain demons. And I think, man, a lot of people think fasting is the hardest thing that they can do, but how many people actually tithe and do give alms? The other thing I think that's important for us is, and I know sadly there are a few, not all, of course. There's so many good charities and worthwhile causes in the Catholic Church, but we have seen some abuses of that as well, where some of that money goes to nefarious and worldly things that are contrary to the gospel, and it's sad to see that they come through avenues of Catholicism. But for the most part, it's really important that we support not only our local parishes and our priests, but also any of the missions that have to do with our parish. Some people have or some parishes have a food bank of some sort, or they have a ministry to the homeless. Some even have ministries to prisoners as well, like you mentioned, Peter. How important is it for us to, if we really focus in on an apostolate of some sort as well, we should all have something that we do for specifically for the church and bringing souls together, but also just really making sure that we're zeroing in on, if we're going to be donating money, we should be really discerning who we donate that to, and making sure that that money goes to causes that are bringing souls to Christ. That should be a focus of ours.
Well, we were led to have this conversation today because what I'm about to tell you, you'll understand that. So before my great friend would pass away, and he was just the greatest, he was just a Catholic evangelist. My Protestant friends used to laugh, oh, how can no, Catholics don't evangelize. And I went through all the teachings that showed where all the great saints that did and so forth and so on. But before that, I would watch on television one day, and I watched this program by this Catholic priest named Father Chapin, Chapin. And he has a program called Daily Living with Father Chapin. And I said, my God, this is like listening to my friend Bill. So I run to YouTube and I start watching his past programs. And I said, jeepers, where did this? Oh, my. Well, before you know it, I would reach out to Father Chapin. My friend would pass away. And he would tell me about the struggle of where his ministry was going. So he didn't ask for anything, but I sent him something. And before I know it, he sent it back. He says, Peter, I can't tell you how I prayed for this, because I couldn't do what I needed to do until you did what you did. And we've come great friends. And I would encourage you, David. It's called Daily Living with Father Chapin. It's just a great priest in West Virginia. I'm hoping to go down there this spring and summer and see him. But they're few and far between now. The priests that are actually trying to speak out and bringing us back to what the faith should be are all being chopped down. They're being basically taken out of the program, all the way up to cardinals, you know, a few that have. And so for me, the big challenge has been, if I've struggled now, I'm going to be candid in this program. I can't write a check right now for something that goes to the Vatican. I can for my local parish. And even my diocese, I've had some issues and so forth. And I know we're supposed to think past that, but I still think our work starts with our local parish. That's where we should be focusing on first before we look for broader and bigger pictures. And, you know, I don't know how it is up where you are, but when you get out of the big cities in U.S., some of these priests like Father Chapin have to go service 4 or 5 churches now, because that's the only way they can have mass. And it's becoming more and more of a challenge to do that. And also, I think if we can find causes that are local first, I think we could bring a lot. My wife and I believe that, not that it's not good to help big internationally known charities, but if we can do something where we see directly it impacts. We found such a place. We became supporters of a man that's doing great work in an orphanage in Uganda. And we see that the money all goes. We see the change on where it's happening. But starting our own background, I think, you make a very good point. And parishes are going to need this. Listen, we're just seeing attendance fall off now. Here in the U.S., it's under 20% of Catholics are attending Mass. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just...
It's less than that here in Canada, Peter.
And, you know, I hate to say this, and I'm not beating the chest, because I don't... Listen, Paul said he works on his future in trembling. So he wasn't even certain, because he just said a prayer he's in. So if he wasn't certain and he was given cardinal knowledge, where am I in my, you know? So I can't be certain of my where I'm heading. But I can tell you that without going to Mass, without receiving and all, I'm sorry to say, your future internal resting spot is called into question. I hope I can be so bold to say that. And if only less than 20% are going, there's going to be a great challenge down the road. And that's where I think where the rubber is going to meet the road. Are we willing? I just lost a great friend who just moved to Protestantism because he said, I can't handle all the suffering that I'm supposed to have. And I go, excuse me, then you don't understand what Christ's ministry was about. It wasn't about great times at all. Christ basically, the ultimate suffering, but even during that, suffered greatly. And it's so amazing now how people don't want to have any strain in their relationship with God. They want an easy type of lifestyle. And that's where why in a Protestant community so many change churches, because every few years they say, well, this is not working out. I don't like the music part, or I don't like this. And they go to another church, and then that works for a while. And then they go to another. Our church, thankfully, although it's being challenged, has basically stayed the same for a couple thousand years. And the teachings hopefully will remain the same, although they're working on trying to change some of them and the basics of them and all. And that's why people like a Father Chapman, or if you, there's another great priest out of Ottawa that has a great
Yes,
ministry.
Father Mark Goring, you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Fantastic.
We need to listen to these folks. And that's the gift of the internet. As bad as it's changed life for the worse, it's also given us a chance to hear and take in, and people like yourself that are really, you know, feeling this movement of and so forth. And why I still openly tie my faith, knowing full well that it's going to create people saying things that you don't like to hear. But this is what the challenge is going to be now in this true all-out spiritual battle now. Listen, as great as the internet is, and it's caused a lot of good things, it also became a tremendous vehicle for the devil to create so many falsehoods. So many kids are trying to live a life because they're seeing this lifestyle that these people are living and so forth. And God is pushed completely out of that picture and all. And and if I may, in case we run out of time, again, the single biggest thing that God speaks about, there's more talk about matters of money and finance than there is about heaven or hell. So I like to joke to my Catholic friends, or when I get a chance to speak at a church, and go to that book, blow the dust off, and start reading it for financial learning, not about saving your soul. Read how much about God devoted to teach us about monies and all. And this would be real critical if I let this go. There's not a positive verse in all of Scripture about debt. More issues here in America and Canada now too, gotten itself into trouble, taking on such debt, high debt levels, that even the running of our country is going to come into question now, because we're going to run into the inability to even service our debt. Same issue for Canada for its size and all, and personal debt and all of that. And God does not have one, I challenge any theologian, because I've done real research in this end, to show me where God encourages putting on debt. Now, he does encourage those of us who are in the position to help others that are in debt, but to continuously live off it and live beyond our means, which America has been doing for several decades now, has led us to be into what I consider the biggest crisis unfolding to us economically, socially, and politically. And unfortunately, Canada is going down a pretty well similar road as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And Alberta, our province here, I mean, it's got the youngest population, I think per capita, the highest income as well, but the highest personal debt. It's been like this for many, many years. So with that opportunity, you know, comes more money, but of course everybody wants to keep up with the Joneses as well. And maybe let's close on that, because I think that's important. That was another thing I wanted to talk to you about, was debt and how that ties into our spiritual lives. Because if we're chasing that all the time, right, you get all this debt, you got all these, and some of it, you know, maybe you need it to a small loan or something to buy a house or things like that. But some of the things that we don't need, but we want. And I guess we got to see where our heart is at when we're making these investments and we're being stewards of the money that God has given us. But this can distract us from the spiritual life too, right? When we're chasing all the time, it can cause strife within our families. Of course, we know that can be detrimental to marriages as well, money issues. What does it mean, I guess, for people out there that do have maybe a large mortgage, they're owing money on a car? There's a lot of financial burdens that they've taken on, but what kind of advice, I guess, would you give more on the spiritual side of how you can live within your means so that you can better serve God and your neighbor?
I was part of the Joneses. So this is what, for me, I know, you know, cause you read the book, but here was a kid that didn't even finish high school, was a warehouse manager, enters Wall Street, and within 11 years, reaches what he thinks is the American dream. multi-millionaire. So I buy a huge home, get five race horses, two race cars, and then took up a terrible male addiction called golf. And my wife says at the height of my arrogance, when I was living the most of me, myself, and I lifestyle, I went out and played golf for 3 or 4, possibly 5 days in a row, was going out again. She said, "Are you going to play golf again?" And I said, "I plan on playing golf every day for the rest of my life." And then, of course, as I shared with you earlier, the first of three battles of depression, this was because of a large loss of sum of money at that point in time. And when it came time to sell my home, my friend Bill, who was the Catholic minister, I said to him, "You know, one of the things I regret, Bill," I said to him, "you know, Mary wanted me to just pay off the mortgage, and I should have listened to her, because if I didn't lose all this money, I could have paid it off." So he said to me, "Why don't you go down and ask your neighbors for it, because you're so concerned about what they're going to think, and see if they'll give you the money to pay the mortgage off." And I said stupidly, I took the hook, "What, they're never going to give me that money, $200,000, to pay off my mortgage." He says, "So what do you care then about what they think? You should only care what God think." And I had to move from a 5,000 square foot home on 5 acres with a 300 foot Belgian block driveway, then, if you can imagine this, to a 2-bedroom condo on the third floor. Okay. And to tell you how God works in your life, in the first summer, because it was only a community pool where I had this big, beautiful pool in the back, my kid was only 8 years old, and I was feeling rotten at night. She was going down to play with her friends and go to swim in this community pool. And I said to Tara, "I just want to tell you how sorry I am that I wasn't smart with our money, and you have to go swim in this pool." And she said, and it was God speaking to her then, "Daddy, I am so glad to be here versus our home there. I had nobody to swim and play with. Now I'm going down. All my friends are down there." And here's this little 8-year-old kid running down, the happiest person in the world. And I thought I did her harm. And here she was, actually happier to live in that. And that was the beginning of realizing there is too much stuff, too much things. You know, if I may say this, because I know it exists in Canada as well, and I don't demean this organization, but public storage facilities are the poster child for what's wrong with America's and Canada's society. Because you don't have to drive that many miles now on any major road, and I'm certain it exists up by you as well,
Yes,
where
you
there
do.
isn't a public storage facility. Well, our parents and grandparents never needed public storage. They lived in much smaller dwellings. They had much less stuff in their house. And every medical study says now that we're more messed up as a society psychologically than any past generation there was. So all this stuff hasn't changed us for the better. It made us worse because we're fighting more and trying to do more to keep all this stuff. So my attitude and my advice has been for well over 10 years, is less is more. It's just still to this day, 7 or 8 out of 10 families that we see for our planning group, we only deal with US residents, still are living 1 to 2 lifestyles above where their finances support. And people say, "Well, how do you know that? How do they do that?" Well, just look every day, every month, the American reports income that spending is twice as much as income. Well, how could you do that? Well, you borrow against it. That's what's happened. And despite all this debt, despite all this borrowing, we're more a mess from any psychological study than any past generation there's ever been. And for the first time, and I suspect it's going to be in Canada as well, the next generation is going to have less than this generation had, because we put ourselves such in a hole. And they're the ones that are going to pay economically and socially for that. And that's what's so interesting about scripture, because if you take the time to read it, you will realize that God has so many different parables and teachings about the troubles of debt and living beyond our lifestyle. And he tells the story, if I may close with this, of the woman giving just a few coins, not to say that we should all give all our coins, but how different she viewed it versus the excess of the rich that were there that only gave from the excess. That's why the rich man had such trouble when God said to him, basically, "Go sell all your stuff and follow me." Not that God calls everybody to do that. but he wants our heart to be in that regard. And that rich man's heart, despite practicing all the things he was told he needed to do, his heart wasn't there. And until your heart is there, you're always going to have struggles with money, because you're choosing money over God. That's why God simply says, you can't serve me and money. Make a decision. That doesn't mean you won't have any if you come in and serve for me, but you'll always be in a battle, no matter how many levels you earn. Because if it was just a matter of how much you accumulate, very wealthy people wouldn't have drug problems, alcohol problems, marital problems, committing suicide, because money would solve it all, and it doesn't. And that's where I really think that I need to take the time to share, as you've given me this forum today. Hopefully one or more of your listeners is going to hear this and change their life and move in a better direction. And that's why we spoke over an hour, and I'm sitting here realizing that I absolutely enjoyed this. And I used to be at a time where if I wasn't on a major financial network, I thought I was wasting my time. Right. So please, God, thank you for reaching out to me and giving me this opportunity to speak with you today.
This has been an absolute blessing. What a powerful hour. And you're right, this has gone very fast, Peter. I hope you'll come again sometime and talk to your friends up in Canada. I'd love that. And yeah, thank you for your ministry and your apostolate and your example. I think it's powerful, and we need that in the church. And it's so great to call you a brother in Christ. Where can our listeners find more out more about you and what you're up to? And I know you make a lot of appearances on other platforms as well, so there's lots of great information for our listeners to track down. But where can they find you?
But where your listeners would find most, if they go to petergrandage.com, there's a link called Suggested Readings. And not only can they read the book for free online, but there's booklets that I write about how we should be God and money and all the subjects. There's one called The Seven Sinful Mistakes We Make Regarding Money and All. There's a wonderful booklet on how we should raise children, about teaching them about money and so forth. And they can read that all online free. They don't even have to give an email. They can just read it at our website. My more secular work is on Twitter. They call it X, but I'm always going to call it Twitter. There I talk on my day-to-day stuff about markets and stuff. And then there's a YouTube channel where interviews that I do, and also some people that I interview do and all. And I would be honored to be back and speak to you again. I would just say that if I may pray to anyone that's listening to this video, who may also hear it through my post in it here in the US, that God calls us to tie our faith with openly and gives us this vehicle of some sort of earnings to put food on our table, to keep shelter our home, but to never ever, and you remind me of this, to ever be afraid to openly share about our faith, especially when we're called upon to do it, because this world is in a spiritual battle. It's been going on, and without God, and for us, our Blessed Mother and our saints, we really have no chance of being victorious in that battle. You will lose if you approach this on your own and don't take it from our Catholic Christian faith. I can tell you without it, I would have not made it to today. I think God has allowed all this to happen in my life just to be here today to speak to you.
Wow. A big thanks to Peter Grandage for joining us on this episode of the podcast. And has the Lord worked some amazing works in his life? What a great testimony and great insights that he provided. Again, find more of his content and more of his interviews and insights at petergrandage.com. Find him on YouTube. He's all over the internet. And again, just such a blessing to have him on this episode. Thanks for listening to the Catholic Canuck podcast, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Peter Grandage. Follow us on Facebook and on X, and also subscribe to our podcast on Google, Apple, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And remember to pray for me as I pray for you in this world. Hey, we're on a journey to heaven together. That's why God gave us brothers and sisters in Christ. And if you're not a Catholic yet, hey, what's stopping you from joining the Catholic Church? We've got so many people praying for you. I'm here to help you as well. If you ever have any questions or need resources, please let me know anytime. And if you just want to say hello, hey, drop me a message through Messenger, email, just let me know. That's the best way to get a hold of me. And Catholics, you know what we've got to do to live life the way the Lord wants us to. Living life in a state of grace at all times, right? We got to go to confession often, not just once in a while, but at least 3 times every year. Every Lent, every Advent, and anytime you're in a state of mortal sin, don't even spend a second of your life there. Thanks for listening to the podcast, everyone. God bless. I'll chat with you very soon.